Jesus under great stress. We see him pleading and talking with the Father, asking for this cup to pass by him, but still submitting to God's will. And we see Jesus again in a state of being very disturbed. It says his body was dropping great drops of blood as the skin separated from the flesh and blood would pull up and come through his pores. He's under a great deal of mental stress here in the garden. But amazingly, we see Jesus, when the arrest begins, you see Jesus become confident, authoritative, calm, and is in control of the situation. It just, again, we got to see that picture. Jesus is struggling with God's will because it's going to take a great sacrifice. But once he has prayed, once he's received the strength, once he's set his mind to follow God's will, he continues in and is courageous, is one of the heroes of this story. The high priest and Judas and Peter and Pilate even, you know, Pilate has a moment of brilliance and a shining light when he begins to discuss and ask some questions of Jesus. But in the end, Pilate collapses to political pressure. So again, as this story unfolds, the only hero we have is the victim himself, who seems to be the only one who's courageous and in control throughout all of these events. Everyone else seems to be just collapsing like dominoes. Even Peter, as we see here, and we know it's coming because Jesus foretold Peter. Peter is one of the disciples, although they scatter, is going to follow Jesus into the city, stay with the crowd, and actually be observing, apparently, the trial from an outer room, a courtyard, as he looks into the high priest's palace and sees Jesus on trial there. And that's when they begin to exit, and Jesus has been condemned there early in the middle of the night. They begin to ask Peter some questions, and that's where he falls and says, I don't know. When he sees what happens to Jesus, it's just too much for him. So even Peter doesn't stand strong. Nonetheless, here we are, chapter 26, verse 47. Let me go back to verse 45. This is Jesus after he'd prayed the third time, and the disciples keep falling asleep. And again, he asked them to pray, but he also asked them to watch, which may have an impression there of guarding, of being alert. What's going on around me? While I'm praying here, I want you to kind of pay attention to the surrounding circumstances. So again, it kind of asks him to set a guard, but then also asks them to pray. Verse 45, then he returned to the disciples and said to them, are you still sleeping and resting? Look, the hour is near, and the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us go. Here comes my betrayer. And here we see Jesus emerging from the Garden of Gethsemane in control. He suffered. The suffering of his soul began, as Isaiah talked about, when the suffering of his soul is complete. He now comes out, and he is now in the situation, and here it comes. Verse 47, while he was still speaking, Judas, one of the 12, arrived. Interesting, they're still putting him in that category of one of the 12, although he's the betrayer. He arrived. With him was a large crowd armed with swords and clubs sent from the chief priests and the elders of the people. Now, just again, there's a lot of things I'm going to suggest as we go through this. And again, you've heard this read before. You've heard it taught. I know you've done some study on your own. This detachment of soldiers is apparently, what it says right here, from the chief priests and the Sanhedrin. It is the rulers of the Jewish people, the Sanhedrin, and the temple guard that has come out to arrest Jesus. It doesn't appear to have anything to do with Roman soldiers at this point. The Roman soldiers are not here. It appears to be something the chief priests and the Sanhedrin have sent out to get Jesus, because they're going to take him now to Annas, the high priest, or the retired high priest, and Caiaphas, the current high priest, for a late night trial. The Romans are not going to come into play until the Sanhedrin presents Jesus to Pilate. So again, you can even see it says a large crowd, not a battalion of Roman soldiers, armed with swords and clubs. And the word clubs is the word sticks. It'd be like baseball bats type of thing. It's like this is kind of a mob that the high priest kind of got together with some of the temple guards, and they're coming out to arrest Jesus. Not the Roman legions coming out to get him at this point. This is the high priest's work. Now the betrayer, that was Judas, had arranged a signal with them. The one I kiss is the man, arrest him. Now again, the kiss was a common a greeting at that time. So really I think what you want to focus on here is not so much the kiss, but the greeting. Judas says, the man I go up and greet, the man I shake hands with, the man I give a hug, the man I give a kiss to, the man I say, hey, what's going on? The man I walk up and I engage in conversation and greet him, that's Jesus. That's the one. Now, again, there's a bunch of Galileans here in this group, and so you'd think that they, you know, we would assume that everyone knows who Jesus is. He's a celebrity. He's on the cover of People magazine. He's a man, Time of the Year's man, Times Man of the Year or something that everyone knows. But again, these soldiers, the temple guards, they may not know exactly who Jesus is. They would have had to seen him in the palace. I mean, for example, name the president, Barack Obama. I mean, how do you know what Barack looks like? The last time you talked with him, you'll remember what he looked like. Have you ever seen him alive? You know what I'm saying? It's like, I've never seen, we saw Michelle one time. Okay, what, you've seen him? Saw him at the state fair. That's right. That's right. It was the day Hope for America's Last Generation, the book had come out, and she had a copy in her hand to give to Tom Ulrichson, because we're going to meet him at a Christian concert there. He's going to give Tom a copy. And she sees Barack Obama shaking hands. And it's like, and they're on news. She says, well, I wanted to give it to Tom. I says, you should have gave it to him. And history would have been altered. The price of gas would be $2. We'd be out of the Middle East. President Obama would be preaching in a church this morning. But no. No, I tease her. Like he would have read it, you know. Or she got taken out by the security. Yeah, she would have been in the news. Crazy woman attacks President Obama, or candidate Obama. Okay, sorry, back to the text. The whole point of going off on that rampage of rambling was that we know how people look because we see them in TV, we see them in pictures, we see them in magazines. And so Judas can say, well, it's Jesus. You know, you've seen him. It's like, no, we haven't. To come in contact with Jesus personally, even in a crowd, you'd be looking at him from a distance. So Judas has to greet him, identify who he is. The one I kiss is the man arrested. Going at once to Jesus, he bypasses everybody else, doesn't make eye contact with anybody apparently, doesn't want to get anybody confused, walks right up to Jesus, and is going up to Jesus, Judas says, greetings, Rabbi. And kissed him, goes up and greets him. And now everybody goes, okay, that's the one. That's Jesus. Jesus replied, friend, do what you came for. Meaning, again, being in control. He says, Judas, you're on autopilot now. You've given into this right here, and it's going to happen just as the scriptures say. Jesus replied, friend, do what you came for. Then the men stepped forward, seized Jesus, and arrested him. With that, one of Jesus' companions reached for his sword, drew it out, and struck the servant of the high priest, cutting off his ear. So Peter's got himself worked up into a rage right here. He's going to be faithful. He's already told him, everybody else will fail you, but I will do it. So he's going to push himself with a little bit of human effort. He draws a sword. Now the disciples, apparently, as we read in the book of John, had two swords with them. They brought two swords. And these swords, the word in the Greek for the sword, there's two different words. This one is a small ceremonial sword, maybe possibly something they use to cut the sacrifice, to prepare the meal. It's not it's something he's wearing in a sheath on his side. It's a different word than what the sword the Romans carried. The Romans carried a larger sword. So this is a smaller sword, something that he might have pulled out, and the servant of the high priest, again, you got to get past the concept there of a slave, of a servant. This would be the assistant of the high priest. The high priest is back in his palace waiting for Jesus to be brought to him, and he sends out his assistant. This man probably has a lot of authority. In fact, he's probably the one leading the group out there. He's probably the one up front. And everyone's kind of behind him. And Peter reaches in, draws out with no one being sure of what's going on, and slices off the guy's ear. The ear just comes off and falls on the ground. Use your own imagination what that would look like. The ear has fallen off. And Peter's ready to take on the temple guard here to protect Jesus. So again, you got to admire and appreciate Peter's attempt, Peter's commitment. But it's human driven. And it's typical of Peter. Again, it doesn't say Peter here. We go to John chapter 18 to find out that this was Peter. So again, it doesn't say Peter here, but we know from John's gospel that it is. The men stepped forward, seized Jesus, and arrested him. Again, notice the force. They're going to seize him, they're going to arrest him, they're putting him in ropes, chains. They've got weapons to get him. Jesus is going to bring this up here in a minute when he questions them. With that, one of Jesus' companions reached for his sword, drew it out, and struck the servant of the high priest, cutting off his ear. And again, it doesn't say a servant, but the servant. The servant of the high priest, meaning this was a position, most likely. Keep thinking. Verse 52. Jesus says to Peter, put away put your sword back in its place. Jesus said to him, for all who draw the sword will die by the sword. Now, this is a huge verse for a variety of reasons. What do we do with this? Some would take this, and this goes for universal pacifism. How do you say that word? Peacefulness. What's that word? Pacifist. There's another pacifism. How do you say that word? Help me out, the people that speak English. Okay. Some people would say there's no place for violence. There's no place for defense. There's no place for weapons. I think what we're looking at right here is a situation. You do what you want to. We can find examples from Genesis all the way through where there is a place for war. There is a place for weapons. There is a place for capital punishment. From Romans chapter 1, even Paul talks about, if I've done anything worthy of death, as he spoke to the court, I do not refuse to die. But he says, I haven't committed a capital crime. There's nothing you've got on me for capital punishment. To this right here, I think Jesus is talking about criminals. For all who draw the sword, or some would say live by the sword, will die by the sword. Peter is just right here. The temple guard has come out with legal authority. Again, it's a little sketchy. They've got a corrupt trial going, but they are the powers that be. And they've come out to arrest Jesus. When you pull your knife, when you pull your gun, when you get a speeding ticket or something, even if it's not, I wasn't going 57, I was still going 55, and you pull a weapon, you are now a criminal. You're a vigilante. You do not defend yourself with a sword. And what Peter's just done by drawing the sword and attacking the servant of the high priest, he has just become a criminal. And he is worthy of a real trial. Jesus is going to have some kind of a monkey trial going on right here. It's a fake trial. It's not going to be true. They're going to find false witnesses. They've already made their decision. But with Peter's action right here, as soon as they're done with Jesus, we can bring Peter in, and we've got real evidence. He's cut off a man's ear. He's a criminal. So Jesus tells him, you're going to act like a criminal, you're going to die by the criminal. In fact, this verse actually confirms capital punishment. He says, if you live like a criminal, the government is going to treat you like a criminal, and they're going to bring capital punishment against you. So this is not a verse about, well, we don't want any weapons. This is a verse telling Peter, you act like this, this is the way the world is set up. You will now receive the punishment of a criminal. Do you think I cannot call on my Father, and he will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels? Jesus asked a very, very pertinent question. Peter, I've just spent the last week, and especially this evening, telling you all of the events that are going to take place, telling you the Son of Man must go as it has been written, that I'm going to do this. I told you Judas was coming. I've told you you're going to betray me. I've given you all these details. Do you think I need you to stop this? He says, I could have stopped this myself. Or he says, I could have called, asked my Father, and he would have sent 12 legions of angels. A legion, the flat number for a legion is like 6,000 soldiers. So take 12 times 6. What's that, 72,000? Is that right? Thank you. And again, is Jesus talking about 72,000 actual angels, or is he just using a large number? Either way, the point, I like to go literal, but the idea there is, Peter, I don't need your little sword cutting off the high priest's servants here. If I wanted this to stop, or if I want to switch directions, I pray and we're out of this. In fact, he just got done praying. If Peter had been paying attention, he was praying about going into this. Jesus is the one in control. He said, I could have called 12 legions of angels. But how then would the scriptures be fulfilled that say it must happen in this way? He says, this is the way it's going to go down. Peter, this is nothing you're going to fight. At that time, Jesus said to the crowd, am I leading a rebellion? Well, if we go back to John chapter 18, and we won't, but we could go there. In John 18, Jesus reaches down, picks the ear up, and puts it back. He gets rid of the evidence. Peter is a criminal. Jesus picks the ear up, puts it back on the guy's head. The evidence is gone. Peter is no longer a criminal. Again, I've always wondered, and we just mentioned as we go by, and I'm sure you have, these people have come out to arrest Jesus if they saw this situation, saw the bloody ear fall on the ground, and the guy's not going, did I just lose my ear? I mean, the guy's got to be, you know, I would think he's like reacting in a, he's like screaming or grabbing at his head or something to this effect. And the very fact that Peter just cut off a guy's ear doesn't mean all the other, the temple guards go like, well, I hope that doesn't happen again. I mean, they've got to have reacted somehow and had swords up against Peter's neck or something. I mean, something has to be going on here that we just have to assume, I would think. And Jesus, in the midst of that, reaches down, puts the ear back on. It's like, oh. And everybody goes, oh, yeah, we're here to arrest you. I mean, I would think that if I'm in the temple guard right there and you're standing by the guy, it's like, I think we better not arrest this guy. It's like, I think what is going on here? But instead, they just go right back into motion, and they start arresting Jesus. I've always thought that was just, even as a child, we read this, like, why would you arrest a guy who just stuck a guy's ear back on his head? And it's the enemy. It's not like one of his own disciples. You were here to arrest me. I'm going to put your ear. Okay, go ahead. What were you saying? It's like, never mind. Okay. It must happen this way. Verse 55, at that time Jesus said to the crowd, am I leading a rebellion that you have come out with swords and clubs to capture me? But he does tell them this, listen. He says, why have you come out to arrest me with weapons? He goes on and says, every day I sat in the temple courts teaching and you did not arrest me. He says, we've already gone down this road. It was a fair trial on the temple courts. It was a fair debate. You asked me questions, I gave you logical answers. I asked you questions and you stumbled and fell apart. There it was. We had a showdown publicly on the Temple Mount. I was there, the temple guard was there, and if I had said something wrong, if I had been illogical, if I had been wrong, you could have arrested me right there for a variety of things. But instead, I walked in, I taught, you listened, you questioned, I answered, and I walked out. But now, tonight, all of a sudden, you're here to arrest me. Which, I mean, the basic point is this. I am right. You know I'm right. You're not going to win. I'm illogical. I'm on the side of truth. The only thing you can do to stop me is come out and physically arrest me at night. He just draws that point right there. Every day I sat in the temple courts teaching, and you did not arrest me. But this has all taken place that the writings of the prophets might be fulfilled. In other words, he says, this is happening because we're going somewhere with it. It's going to result in, of course, salvation, as we know. Then all the disciples deserted him, just as he said, and fled. Now remember, they're scattering because they're scared. Jesus is about now to be arrested by the temple priest. We do know that Peter is going to follow him very, very closely. Verse 57, those who had arrested Jesus took him to Caiaphas, the high priest, where the teachers of the law and the elders had assembled. Now, right there, that would be the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin had 71 members. They need to have a third of them to be there for, what do you say that word, quorum? Is that the word quorum for an official meeting? It's a sketchy meeting. It's a sketchy council meeting because, one, it's at night. It's a trial. It's at the high priest's mansion. It's not in one of the rooms set aside for trials. It's almost like a private trial. And if you look on your map, the reason I gave you this other sheet of paper with the map on it is I've got some, this was from the first edition of Framework, and so we had some mistakes. I misnumbered. Tony's got them. I copied out Tony's text, and she's written the numbers in, so they match down below. But if you go to number one, the Garden of Gethsemane, that's where we are at. Jesus is then brought in with the guards across the Kidron Valley, right through the city of David, over the Central Valley, and he goes, first of all, to number 2 and 3. Number 2 is it's before Annas. That's in chapter 18, verse 19. We're going to go there very quickly because Matthew skips that. There appears to be 5 trials, if you want to break it down this way, 5 trials of Jesus. I'll go through them very quickly. Number 2 on the map is when he appears before Annas. He is the godfather of the priesthood. He's the one who controls the shops up on the Temple Mount. He was the high priest many years before, and the Romans didn't like him because he was so corrupt and they got rid of him. But since he has been deposed, I think Jesus was a child when Annas was the high priest. Since he was deposed as high priest by the Romans, he's had 3 sons serve as high priest, which he controlled like a puppet. And right now, his son-in-law, Caiaphas, in this story tonight or today, is the high priest. As I think about it, Caiaphas, they have excavated and found Caiaphas's tomb and his family tomb and the ossuaries where the bones are put in the boxes. They have found his and his daughters and a lot of his family. They've excavated and found that it's down south of this map right here. It's very close to the city walls. Nonetheless, Jesus goes to Annas. We're going to read that. They then take him to the high priest's palace where Caiaphas lives. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Then he's going to be taken up to the Temple Mount up there for 4 and 5 is that. And that's going to be right around sunrise. Because now the Sanhedrin is going to meet in one of the official meetings, official rooms, to have the official trial. And they're basically just going to say, yes, he's guilty. Now we take him to Pilate for execution. So actually the real trial, if you want to say the real trial, is going to take place at Caiaphas' house, where they're going to get Jesus to blasphemy. And then they're going to have the setup trial to confirm what they heard privately on the Temple Mount at point 4 and 5, right at sunrise. As soon as the sun comes up, that's why we can time that. I got that number 5 there. It says it's the Sanhedrin at sunrise. I think I've got it written down here. About 5:15. That time of year would be about 5:15 in the morning. And that would mean a good majority of the 71 members of the Sanhedrin now are going to be there. At point 3 over at Caiaphas' house tonight, there's not going to be everyone's going, not everyone can be there most likely, because there's a lot of them are going to be asleep. It's a very fast trial. They weren't planning on arresting Jesus until after the Passover. So all of this is moved way up. This is moved way up on the schedule for what the high priest wants to do. And so this is not necessarily organized on their part. Then soon after they get done at the Sanhedrin meeting at point 4 and 5 there on the Temple Mount in Solomon's Colonnade, Jesus is then taken over to Fort Antonia, number six. And that's where they wake Pilate up. And Pilate's going to question him. We'll read about this next week. Pilate's going to question him and find out, well, you're from Galilee. You're out of my jurisdiction. I'm going to pass this problem off to your king. And he's going to send him down to Herod's palace. Now, I have got him over there. Herod's palace is the citadel today, right by the Joppa Gate, number 7. That is King Herod the Great's palace, where his sons, when they would come down, Antipas comes down from Galilee, that's where they would stay at that palace there. But there is, again, I don't want to bore you with this, but there is the Maccabean palace. And some very good archaeologists and scholars, that Maccabean palace would be more over by the high priest palace, number 2 and 3, over in that part of the town. And some people think that Herod would have come down, and not Herod the Great, Herod his son, Antipas, would have come down and stayed, and would have made residence. According to Josephus, they spent their time in the Maccabean palace. That is another location. Okay, but either way, it's either at 7, is either there or at another location where Herod's staying. When Jesus won't respond to Herod, he sends him back to Pilate. That's number 8. And this would be the 5th trial, where he appears again before Pilate, and Pilate tries to set him free, asks him some more questions, and finally he says, I'll whip him, and then he's taken to his death. And you see, just outside the city walls, where the Church of the Holy Sepulchre stands today, you've got Golgotha, and you've got tombs that are carved out of an abandoned quarry. That'd be number 10. It's an abandoned quarry that they'd exhausted, and what they did, they brought some dirt in. Archaeology can find this. Brought some dirt in, planted some plants, and made it a garden, and used the rest of the quarry that couldn't be used for stones just to dig out little caves in or tombs, and that's where Jesus is buried. In fact, you can see in the back of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre some of those first century tombs that are still cut out in that quarry. You can go look at them and find them in the back of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. So that's the way it looks. We're looking today at number 2 and 3. Jesus brought from the Garden of Gethsemane to Annas' house, probably there in the palace complex. And then number 3, where he's going to be meeting here with Caiaphas. So if you would please go to John chapter 18. I want to show you this first trial. I'll just read through it. John 18. Matthew skips this. Some would say it's the same trial, just defined in a different way. And you can study this and come up with your own conclusion. I think this is Jesus being brought to Annas first, because he is the one who controls all the puppet strings of the high priest. When Jesus turned those tables over twice on the Temple Mount, this was the guy that was losing money. All those shops that goes along the Western Wall Street, right outside the Western Wall where it's at today, those were all controlled by this guy. This guy had his fingers in everything. He hadn't been the high priest since sometime around, I can't remember the date, but it was back when Jesus was a lot younger. He'd been removed, but he would lost his position, but he maintained his power with the people. Okay, here we go. Chapter 18 of John, verse 19. It says, meanwhile, the high priest questioned Jesus about his disciples and his teaching. And this, it says high priest, but it's Annas. I have spoken openly to the world, Jesus replied. I always taught in the synagogues or at the temple where all the Jews come together. I said nothing in secret. Why question me? Ask those who heard me. A very basic point. Jesus is very logical. You read this and you think he's talking in some kind of religious overtones. He's talking in a legal manner. Anna says, tell us what you did wrong. Jesus says, well, I'm not. I'm not going to tell you what I did wrong. If I've done something wrong, you go find your own witnesses. I'm not going to make it that easy for you. You want me to just tell you, these are the things I'm guilty of? You're the one that thinks I'm guilty. Go out and find your witnesses. I'm not going to sit here and confess for myself. I don't have to testify against myself. Where's all your evidence? He's saying, show me some evidence. That's all he's saying. You go do your homework. Don't just bring me in and try to intimidate me and threaten me to saying something that you're going to accuse me of. Where's your evidence? I said, nothing in secret. Why question me? Ask those who heard me. Go get your own evidence or your own witnesses. Surely they know what I said. Surely if I'm that guilty, you've got all kinds of evidence. Surely you can get your own. When Jesus said this, one of the officials nearby struck him on the face. In other words, they thought it was a little mouthy to be talking to Annas, the godfather of the city, to say, I'm not going to testify against myself. You go get the witnesses. And they slapped him because, like, that's not the answer he wanted. Don't be getting mouthy with the high priest. Well, but judicially, you don't have to testify against yourself. Is this the way you answer the high priest? Verse 23, Jesus says, if I said something wrong, testify as to what is wrong. But if I spoke the truth, why did you strike me? Now you're really in trouble. I'm just holding my ground defensively, saying you go find the witnesses. Then you strike me for not forfeiting my rights. And now if I'm wrong, what did I do? What did I say wrong? But if I am not wrong, now why did you hit me? Now you're physically, you try to intimidate me. Now you're hitting me. What kind of trial is this? You see? You see why that made him mad. Verse 24, then Annas sent him still bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. So you see how you got two high priests going right there? You've got the retired guy, or the deposed guy, who's had his son serve as high priest, and now his son-in-law. And so now he says, okay, I'm sending you to the Sanhedrin. So probably, go back to Matthew 26, probably what takes place, they weren't planning on getting Jesus arrested that easily. Because remember, this was not their plan. The Last Supper is taking place, and Jesus sets it into motion when he tells Judas, go, it's time. Judas gets up and goes and tells them, I've got it. So they go, well, we're going to wait till after Passover. He says, it's time. So they're scrambling. They send out a detachment of soldiers, even with sticks and clubs, arrest Jesus at Gethsemane, and it's like, well, what are we going to do with him? Well, let's have a trial. We can't wait. We got the Passover coming. So they bring him to Annas, the godfather, the old guy, and has him kind of give him a preview, a pre-trial, kind of get him going, while they're assembling as much of the Sanhedrin as they can in the high priest's palace. And it is a mansion. They've excavated it. It's probably called the burnt house today. They have excavated it. And you got a lot of little ritual baths. It's a beautiful place, except it's been burnt a long time ago, 70 AD, and it's been buried for a long time, and all the wood's decayed, just enough. Anyway, they're meeting with Annas while the Sanhedrin's assembling there at the high priest's mansion, and then he sends them still bound to Caiaphas, and that's where we are in Matthew 26. Notice how John says, still bound. This whole time, Jesus has his hands tied behind his back or tied in front or something. He's bound like a criminal. Okay, so now we are in chapter 26, verse 57. Are we there, Matthew 26? Those who had arrested Jesus took him to Caiaphas, the high priest. Now again, I'm putting in there that Matthew just skips that episode with Annas that we just talked about. Where the teachers of the law and the elders had assembled. That's the Sanhedrin, because they came from the priestly group and they came from amongst the people. The priestly group would probably be the Sadducees and the Pharisees, the scribes and the teachers of the law, coming from the scholars. Verse 58, but Peter followed him at a distance right up to the courtyard of the high priest. And that courtyard would be, again, it's a mansion, it's a palace. And so there's a courtyard, like if you want to think of a deck, you know, something like that. They got the grill over here and a little jacuzzi set up over here. And it's probably bigger than your deck. And people are crowding out there. There's some soldiers that are waiting there. There's a crowd of people that have come. They're kind of standing out there. And they take Jesus into the high priest's palace, which is not where you have a trial. It's his living room, if you would. And some of the Sanhedrin members are there. And Jesus is now bound in front of the actual functioning high priest, Caiaphas. But Peter followed him at a distance right up to the courtyard of the high priest. He's out on the deck by the grill and the jacuzzi on the high priest's deck, looking in, watching what's taking place in the room there. I'm adding some to this. I mean, you can tell the difference. I don't know if they had jacuzzis, but it kind of gives you a feel for where they're at. They're not in a legal governmental building. They're at the high priest's palace, and it's 2 o'clock in the morning. He entered and sat down with the guards to see the outcome. So he slips in, some of the guards would find some seats. It's a large palace area, so they're kind of sitting there, kind of watching what's taking place. Peter's being pretty brave. Apparently all the other disciples have scattered. John is going to be at the cross. We know that. Peter here is so far right there with him. John's going to show up later on, or at least appear here again too. They've scattered, and they're kind of starting to regroup, kind of coming in the backside, kind of like mixing with a crowd. Kind of, you know, again, people don't recognize Jesus necessarily. They won't recognize these guys. So it's not, again, as obvious as today we got photographs. Verse 59, the chief priest, Caiaphas, and the whole Sanhedrin were looking for false evidence against Jesus so they could put him to death. Now notice right here the phrase whole Sanhedrin. Now you got to take that into consideration in what I'm teaching you, because I'm telling you the whole Sanhedrin is not there. But if you go with that word, that means all 71 members are in the room. And I think as we read through this, it means that was their motive, and a portion of them, a quorum is there ready for this trial. But I don't think it means all 71 of them were present, because I think we're missing probably Nicodemus and Joseph for sure. But, you know, I'm just telling you that as we go through this. And that's not a discrepancy of Scripture. That's just which way you approach that phrase. The chief priests and the whole Sanhedrin were looking for false evidence against Jesus so they could put him to death. Now, that's exactly the way you want to go into a trial. Everybody's there looking for evidence so we can kill you. What's your plan? We just want to get some evidence so we can kill you, whatever it takes. But they did not find any, though many false witnesses came forward. And the problem with this, these guys are stepping forward. They've gone off and they've grabbed some, woken some guys up, says, hey, we want you to come in here and testify against Jesus. And even as they're going, their testimony was so weak and flimsy that they were contradicting each other. You'd have this witness would say this, and another guy would step forward, and he'd say something which would just nullify this witness. It's like they can't even get anybody to lie correctly. So it just keeps falling apart in their fingers. And you watch, you can see this. They've got the witnesses. Remember what Jesus told Annas? I paraphrase what he says. Get your own witnesses. Well, they are. They are. Over at Caiaphas' palace, they've got the witnesses. They got them bribed, and they're going to lie. But their lies contradict each other. You understand how that works. If you tell the truth, if everybody tells the truth, the story just comes together. But if everybody lies a little bit, nothing fits. It's like puzzle pieces from all different puzzles. Nothing is fitting together, and the judicial structure there sees it clearly. We have nothing. We keep contradicting ourselves. We got to kill this guy. So they're going to do what Annas tried in the very beginning and get Jesus. We can't get anyone to lie correctly. Let's just go after Jesus. So here's what takes place. Finally, two came forward and declared, this fellow says, I am able to destroy the temple of God and rebuild it in 3 days. Okay, that's what he says. They came for the, okay, we've got something. We heard him say something about destroying the temple and rebuilding it. Annas knows this isn't going very well, so Caiaphas, then the high priest stood up and said to Jesus. At this point, the witnesses are just so weak and there's no evidence. The high priest, he stands up from his judicial bench and he's going to go one-on-one with Jesus. Okay. This isn't working. I want to ask you some questions. So here he goes. The high priest takes control right here. By standing up, he says, forget it. I'll do it from here. He says, the high priest stood up and says, are you not going to answer? What is this testimony that these men are bringing against you? Where is your defense? We've got this overwhelming evidence of these two witnesses that say you want to tear down the temple and you want to build some different new religious system. What do you have to say? And Jesus isn't responding. He says, do you realize this is a very condemning accusation? You know, he's making a big deal about it. They barely got a thread of evidence, and they've twisted it. So he's going off on this. But Jesus remained silent because he's in control. It's like, the high priest said to him, I charge you under oath by the living God. Because Jesus will not speak, he says, okay, I'm making a power play. I put you under oath, and I command you by the living God, you have to respond to that question. And so he's going to add on right here. Tell us, if you are the Christ, the Son of God. Tell us, are you the Christ, the Son of God? Now, what Jesus says here, it's a tough translation. Different translations do it different ways. He says, yes, it is as you say, but I say to all of you. What that phrase is capturing is this right here. It's a formula that means this. Yes, but that's not how I would say it. In other words, he say, are you the Christ, the Son of God? Yes, but I would say it a little different. And then he's going to say, because when he says, are you the Christ, That means in their political, religious, theological setting at that time in history, a great leader that will arise and drive out the Gentiles, the Romans, and then lead them into an age of prosperity. A guy like David or some Samuel, some Moses guy will lead them into another phase of prosperity in world history. That's what they're thinking. That's what they want. And Jesus' whole approach is threatening that system. So he says, are you the Christ, the Son of God? And Jesus' formula in the Greek that is written there is, yes, but I would word it a little differently. In other words, yes, I am the Messiah, but not like you think. So and so Jesus now, in a very, very undiplomatic manner, is going to describe himself. And this is really one of the first times Jesus overwhelmingly, publicly identifies who he is. It's kind of like saying, stab me right here. Here it goes. Yes, it is as you say, but I say to all of you, in the future, you will see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of the Mighty One and coming on the clouds of heaven. He'd asked, are you the Messiah? Are you the Son of God? Jesus says, yes, I will accept that, but let me clarify. I am also the Son of Man, referred to in the book of Daniel, that when you see me, I will be coming in clouds of glory. I will be sitting on God's throne. Oh, and you just imagine, you see everybody just like turns white. Like, oh. Not they're intimidated by him, but it's like, I can't believe. He thinks he's the Messiah. He thinks he's the Son of God. He thinks he's the Son of Man out of Daniel, that he is going to actually be the one seated in the end on the throne of God. Then the high priest tore his clothes and says, this is what he wants. This is what Annas was trying to get Jesus to do. And finally, they can't have any witness. We don't need to worry about it. He said that he'd rebuild the temple in 3 days. He's teared down. We don't need that anymore. He tears his clothes as a public demonstration of blasphemy. That was a typical, I guess the high priest had a whole wardrobe of clothes that he would just rip during moments like this. But it says, then the high priest tore his clothes and says, he has spoken blasphemy. And it's almost like, yes. But he's going about, oh, I can't believe I had to hear this blasphemy. But actually inside he's going, yes, we got him. He has spoken, he's just playing out the role. He has spoken blasphemy. Why? Here's his whole point. Why do we need any more witnesses? We don't need to do any more. This is all we need to kill him right here. Why do we need any more witnesses? Look now, you have heard the blasphemy. What do you think? And he hands it over to the Sanhedrin. He says, there, I gave it to you wrapped up with a bow. What do you think? And of course, he is worthy of death, they answered. Excellent. This now that the trial is set, now they just have to get permission to kill him. And they, because of Roman occupation, can't just go off and kill him. They are going to do that to Stephen, and they are going to do that to James when they push him off the Temple Mount and different things like this. But that is in a time where they're going to have the governor is been replaced. He's gone, and a new one's coming. And there's a little bit of confusion on the Roman leadership. And so vigilantes are going to arise and execute some of the Christians. But in this case right here, Pilate has a strong hold on the city. The Romans are well in control. They can't just go off and have a vigilante killing. So now they got to move this through the Roman courts with this verdict. And Pilate's going to hear the case and is going to go, this man has done nothing worthy of it. This is a joke. And then they're going to, as you know, they know that Pilate's not going to go with it because he's just. He sees this as a fraud. He just knows that they're jealous of Jesus. And then someone shouts, hey, if you don't follow this, you're no friend of Caesar. We follow Caesar, our king. This guy says, see, that wasn't even brought up here, except that he's the Messiah. They're going to say, he says he's the king. And Caesar is our king. As Jews, we follow Caesar. Now, is that what the Jews believe, that they follow Caesar? When it's expedient, we have no other king but Caesar. What about you, Pilate? Are you going behind Pilate's or Caesar's back? And Pilate had some trouble. He'd been called in on the carpet a couple times before. And it's kind of like, no, I'm in trouble now. Oh, man. So he's got to either go down with Jesus or he's going to have to execute Jesus and follow. So Pilate kind of gets his hands tied. Nonetheless, we're rushing ahead of the story. Verse 65, then the high priest tore his clothes and says, he has spoken blasphemy. Why do we need any more witnesses? Look now, you have heard the blasphemy. What do you think? The Sanhedrin that is assembled there say, he is worthy of death, they answered. Then they spit on his face, struck him with their fists. Others slapped him and says, prophesy to us, Christ, who hit you? Okay, now court case over. They're going to now start getting everybody ready for the sunrise session where they're going to bring him in and say, this man said this. They're going to find him guilty so he can take him to Pilate for the execution. They got to rush through this. But now as they leave, now people are starting to leave and people are starting to look in people's faces and they see Peter. Now Peter was sitting out in the courtyard. He had come in and sat in the back of the room. Now maybe gone out in the courtyard. I'm not sure if he'd stay in the courtyard the whole time. You got to kind of try and read through that. But he's still right there on the patio by the grill. Now Peter was sitting out in the courtyard, having heard and watched this. And a servant girl came to him. You also were with Jesus of Galilee. Now how does he know you were with Jesus of Galilee? She may be thinking about the battalion that came in with Jesus, or maybe she was with them that had gone out. Somehow she's seen him with Jesus, maybe in a public setting, but it may have been when they went out to arrest him. Somehow she says, wait, you were with him. But he denied it before them all. I don't know what you're talking about. Then he went out to the gateway, and again, that would be further out away from the patio. He was getting ready to leave the palace area, the high priest area, out of the courtyard, out, you know, going to go out on the public sidewalk. He went out to the gateway where another girl saw him and said to him, the people there, this fellow was with Jesus of Nazareth. I know he was one of them. He denied it again with an oath. I don't know that man. Because again, he realizes, oh man, this is going down really fast. Again, he's lost his concentration. After a little while, those standing there went up to Peter and says, surely. So the girls didn't like go away, go, oh, our fault. They were got some more people. I'm sure that's one of them. And they're kind of gaining some support. Like, yeah, look at him. And Peter's like, oh my gosh, people are staring at me. And a couple of these girls, the two girls, maybe they got another group, they come up and they say it again. After a little while, those standing there went up to Peter. Now there's a group comes up. Surely you are one of them, for your accent gives you away. When you says, no, I don't know him. That's Galilean. We know it. We saw you tonight, but we also remember you're from Galilee. Then he began to call down curses on himself, and he swore to them, I don't know the man. And, you know, curses on, if I'm lying, may lightning strike me, or some of that effect. Immediately a rooster crowed. Then Peter remembered the word Jesus had spoken. Before the rooster crows, you'll disown me three times. And he went outside and wept bitterly. It's like, oh my gosh, that came on him. So he's brave, he's there, and he just got to cut the high priest's ear off, and all of a sudden, these events start to transpire, and pretty soon it's three, oh, and there he is, exactly where Jesus said he'd be. And just so disappointed, goes off and weeps bitterly. And again, this picks up again later on in the account of the resurrection when Jesus addresses this issue. Chapter 27, verse 1, early in the morning, all the chief priests and the elders of the people came to the decision to put Jesus to death. That's now, if you look on your maps, now you're at number 4 and 5. It's early morning. They've assembled at the official location for an official trial to validate what they've just done illegally. Because they had to wait. They can't have a trial for capital punishment at night. It's got to be during the daytime. But there's also another trick there in the Jewish law. You can condemn a man during a daytime trial, but you can't execute him the same day. But they're going to push that off on Pilate. They bound him, led him away, and handed him over to Pilate, the governor. So right there, chapter 27, verse 1 and 2, or chapter 27, verse 1, that would be the third trial. You've got the appearing before Annas, the old high priest, the trial we talked about today most of the time with before Caiaphas, and then they took him and assembled the whole Sanhedrin in the next couple hours, and he's going to have his official trial, or at least the legal trial that was set up, and that would be the third trial, and now he's going to appear before Pilate. Well, let's bow our heads and pray, and then Chad and Meg are going to lead us in one more song. Father, we come to you today and we do thank you so much for the chance of looking at these things. We thank you for the strength that we see Jesus demonstrating. We also know the suffering that he's gone through and will continue to go through as he pays for our sins. We thank you for this and ask that we may take full advantage of what Jesus Christ has done for us, of removing sin from us and letting us become members of the kingdom of God. Again, we thank you for the scriptures and ask that we may live them in our lives and we become a people that is pleasing to you at this time in history. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.